the big British castle. It's time for Adam and Joe to broadcast on the radio. There'll be some music and some random talking in between, and then eventually the whole thing will just end.
That's The Smiths with This Charming Man. Hey, how you doing, listeners? Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. I'm Adam Buxton.
Hello, I am Joe Cornish.
Joe Cornish,
off mic. How you doing, man? Joe's a little upset because someone's got control of his computer screen.
It's all going wrong this morning. Someone's got control of my screen.
It's like Mission Impossible.
It's taken over!
Tom Cruise has got control of Cornballs' computer.
I'm sure it'll be sorted out. And a special good morning to Black Squadron, the country's most physically attractive fighting force.
Let's stand the squadron to attention with the following jungle.
Black Squadron!
Always catch the beginning of the show. Black Squadron don't want to miss a thing. That's not the way Black Squadron roll.
Black Squadron!
Went to bed at a reasonable hour. Gotta be sharp on Saturday morning. That's the secret of the Squadron's power.
Black Squadron!
Now, the reason Black Squadron are one of the countries, well, I say one of, are the country's most physically attractive fighting forces because they are now after 12 weeks of commands. Mm. They're very toned.
Sure they are.
Beautifully. Not over the top musculature.
No.
But just
not
lovely.
Not grotesque.
Not grotesque, just very shapely. And this week, Black Squadron, we're going to give you a command that evokes one of the most dangerous periods of rock history.
Sure.
One of the most rebellious and edgy periods of rock history.
We've thought about this a lot. It's not easy formulating commands for the squadron, is it? Because when you're thinking about the big British castle guidelines, the things that you don't want to encourage people to do, the things that people might do because they're so enthusiastic that they cause harm to themselves and others around them, you've really got to be careful.
You've got to be careful. So when you hear this Black Squadron command, don't do anything naughty.
No.
Don't make any rude signs at the camera.
Don't make any rude politically inflammatory signs. Don't hurt anyone.
Don't put any safety pins in difficult places.
The way you can't get them out again or you have to go to A&E afterwards. We don't want anyone to finish the show in A&E because of the Black Squadron command.
So take care, squadroners. When you hear the command, you'll wonder why we're saying all this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's quite tame, really.
Well, it depends how you interpret it, isn't it?
What is the Black... Who are Black Squadron? What is the Black Squadron command?
Well, the Black Squadron command is a way of challenging the elite listening force, the squadron that listens to this show live every 10 o'clock to 10:30. That is the Black Squadron period. You're not really a squadron member if you listen to the show outside of that period. You're a lazy squadron. And if you are able to, you have to take a picture of yourself as soon as Commander Cornballs issues the command and then send it in to the following email address, which is adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk. adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk. You could also text your picture to 64046.
Texts will be charged at your standard message rate. And we will put some of the best of the photographs on our blog afterwards, just to warn you. So yeah.
We should really be playing a record in the style of the command. Are we?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's on top of it.
James
is a proper producer. He's been doing this for many weeks.
Stand by, Black Squadron. Here we go with your command. The text number 64046 for your photos. This week's Black Squadron command is... punk!
Oh dear. There's a little raspberry at the end there. There's not too many songs that end with a raspberry, are there? That's a good one though, isn't it? Did you ever have a punk phase, Joseph Cornish?
Not really, no. No, I was a bit too young for punk. That was during the Silver Jubilee and stuff. I was being very patriotic and monarchistic and wearing lots of Union Jack badges and going to street parties.
Same here. I was
certainly was not being a punk.
I wasn't jumping about being rude about the Queen. Why would I want to do that? Why be any different? I was enjoying my Jubilee mug, which I still have on the shelf, along with my Charles and Di.
Well, you've got a very big collection of royal memorabilia.
Sure I do.
The listeners would be surprised if they walked into your front room. It's completely decked out with Union Jacks, Kate and Wills, Fergie and what's-his-face, and Charles and Di stuff.
Yeah.
Jubilee, Golden Jubilee, Queen Mum. You love them.
Absolutely love them. Can't get enough of them. Laura, memorabilia.
You're royalty obsessed.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, the Black Squadron command was punk and squadron. I don't know what's going on. We've only had... here we go. There's a third. Oh, actually, we've just refreshed and things have got better. It started out quite badly. Look at that, man. Is What's that he doing? Today?
Hey, that's good. That's art. He's got clips on him, and he's got...
What sort of clips are they? They're like blue plastic clothes pegs.
He's got fancy clothes pegs
all over his face, literally. So he's like a human porcupine. They're on his nose, his lips, his nostrils, his ears, and his hair. He's suffering for his squadron.
That's very good.
There's a gentleman. Oh, that's very good, isn't it? A gentleman or a lady, possibly a lady, I guess, who already has a nose ring, and she simply put a safety pin into the nose ring. That's a way of, like, piercing herself without actually, you know, compromising her skin.
There's quite a scary-looking man flicking a V sign, and he doesn't appear to be wearing clothes. It's the top part. He looks like...
That can't be published. That V sign is too naughty for the bit, for the castle.
Naughty.
That's naughty. That would outrage people if
like,
we posted that.
He looks like Vinnie Jones, that geezer.
Mm, that man's just wearing a T-shirt saying punk.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good. Well, good, keep the pictures coming in, Black Squadron. There's some very creative interpretations.
You know, speaking of the royal family as we were just then, I found myself in a strange position the other day. Someone position. I was round for lunch at someone's house, and they had that book of photographs where they've, you know, they've got doubles for the royal family.
Yeah.
And they're taking pictures of them in shocking positions and stuff, doing naughty things. What's the name of that lady who does those?
Oh, Alison.
Yeah.
I've got a mug by her.
It's an Alison. And anyway, they were flicking through that, and one of the pictures was, and everyone was kind of passing the book round and chuckling at it and stuff. And one of the pictures...
It sounds like a marvellous dinner party.
Well, it was, you know, it was one of those things where, I don't know if you, I'm sure you do get this actually, Joe, but everyone is getting so into something and enjoying it so much, you think, I'm going to rain on this parade.
You're talking to scornballs.
Exactly.
What do you mean? That's my MO.
That's right. I'm going to think, what would Joe do? I know, he'd get a little bucket of scorn. He'd pour it on that book.
That's not what I do.
So I thought, I'm going to do that too. So I got out my scorn bucket. And when the book came round to me, I found this, one of the photographs was, they'd mocked up the doubles of Wills and Kate out in Africa, and Wills and Kate were wandering along hand in hand in their nice clothing, looking happy, and in the background, there were loads of African people, like tribes people dressed up in tribal gear, carrying Wills and Kate's luggage, you know,
right.
Like loads and loads of their luggage. And,
I get it.
And looking sort of exhausted. And I just thought, that is beyond the pale. Because I don't think Wills and Kate would do that. I don't think that they would walk along there and let someone else carry their luggage in that way, whether they were in Africa or any other part of the world. And I found, like, what started out being a bit of scorn pouring ended up being just me defending the royal family against accusations.
And it's happening again.
In a way, it is, because I'm broadcasting it, aren't I? On a radio program. I forgot about that. Listen, I better do a free play. Here's Emmy the Great, and we love Emmy the Great on this program.
We do love Emmy the Great.
We were introduced to her and her lovely world, I guess thanks to our producer James, who got her along to one of our Glastonbury shows a few years back, and she sang for us live then. I hope she's going to do the same next weekend when we're in Glastonbury, because Emmy the Great is playing. Emmy the Great is the name of her band. Emmy herself is called Emma Lee Moss, and her new album is called Virtue. This is a track called Dinosaur Sex. Steady. And it's beautifully produced, and it's about... What are you chuckling at?
Nothing. You're sounding like your dad. You're sounding like your dad.
Oh, am I?
He's beautifully produced.
Absolutely beautifully produced. The sounds are wonderful. It's about the apocalypse, fear of the apocalypse, Joe.
Sure it is.
Yeah, here it is. Dinosaur Sex. This is Emmy the Great. Minnie Riperton. She's absolutely ripped.
She's got mini Rippertons.
Yeah.
Listen, Black Squadron, you've done an extraordinary job with this command this morning. Well done, all of you. Particularly Rowan Smith, who has sort of used onion rings and a bit of popcorn to create some piercings.
Yeah.
Is that an onion ring?
I hope so.
It's snaking in and out of his mouth like two vampire teeth that are conjoined.
What is it? Let's have a look. Is it
and
a
then
sausage?
He's put a piece of... It's not a sausage. What kind of sausages do you eat?
Really?
Circular ones.
Yeah, thin.
Round well, sausages. Can you get round sausages?
Yeah. Well, when they hang them up
can't.
In shops, like they tie them
oh,
together.
That's true. Yeah. Like, you could have a completely circular...
Wurst.
Bratwurst. That's very good. Rowan. Tom in Cheltenham was the gentleman with the hundreds of blue plastic clothes pegs.
Simon Pegg.
He's suffered a great deal. He's got a bulgy eye look, but I can assume that is the pain causing that.
Yeah.
Claire and Andrew McCluskey. Have we featured them before? I think we might have, but they've done a very good job with bin bag dresses.
Bin bags.
That was an earlier Squadron Command there coming back into play. Do you remember that?
That's right.
Bin bag dress.
It's not a practical way of dressing. I mean, that's the thing about the punks, is that they smelled bad because if you wear bin bags...
They didn't care.
They didn't care. I know they didn't care. That wasn't the point.
No.
But it was a very uncomfortable time
for fun.
Young people.
You fun think to it be was filthy.
Fun. Yeah, but no, sweaty as well.
Anyway, Claire and Andrew are doing very good. I mean, Andrew's got a very, very rebellious face there. He's cocking a snoop or a snook.
I would say a snook.
And Claire there, she's looking very grumpy and belligerent.
Yeah, she doesn't want to do what she's told.
No, she's going to do the opposite of what she's told, like Colin Farrell.
Exactly.
There's Ewan, and Ewan's just put a big furry cushion on his head to create the illusion of a punk haircut.
Spiky haircut.
He's very good. Did you watch that documentary about the history of festivals last night? I'm sure it was a repeat.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
It was quite good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He didn't. Adam's lying. He didn't watch it. It was on BBC 4. It was very good. Some of you listeners out there might have seen it. It was about the history of free festivals.
It mainly made me think every single festival they covered, I just thought, oh, glad I wasn't there.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did watch it.
I get very mixed signals from you this morning.
I saw Jeremy Beadle there in it.
That was good. But the point is, the punks ruined it. The punks came along and ruined it. It was all going swimmingly.
Yeah.
They came along and ruined it with their shouting and spitting.
The hippies ruined it. No, actually, the cops ruined it.
Everyone ruined it.
Someone's always going to ruin it.
Anyway, well done, Black Squadron. That's a terrific response. Watch out for the very best of those photos up on the Adam and Joe blog, bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe. They'll be there later in the day, but not if you flicked a rude sign at the camera or did anything that isn't family friendly.
Exactly.
Because this is sort of family friendly punks, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like the kids' show.
Anodyne punks.
Yeah.
Pretend punks.
Part-time punks. Kaiser Chief news, ladies and gentlemen. The Kaisers are back, and as far as I know, they're doing something like they've uploaded a load of tracks, 20 tracks or something. You can download them from their website, and then at some point they will decide which ones are the public's favourites, and then maybe those will be compiled onto an official album release. Isn't that putting the cart before the horse? You can't just let the public... decide, can you? You have to tell the public.
Well, if there are more tracks online than there are on the album, then won't you just miss the tracks that aren't on the album on the album?
I think it's up to the band to say, this is what you're getting, enjoy it or don't.
Oh,
that's the album. Deal with it. You know? There's all this democracy of the web. Anyway, having said all that, enjoy this. I'm not saying anything about the songs. I'm sure they're great. This is Little Shock. I've not heard this one before. I think it's probably brilliant. It's the Kaiser Chiefs with Little Shock.
Exploring new sonic territory. That's the Kaiser Chiefs with Little Shocks. Fantastic sounds here on BBC Six Music. That's my new voice. You're going to do the rest of the show like that.
Quickly news.
Okay, we've got to stand the squadron down first.
Okay.
A Black Squadron!
Stand down, your work is done. You've earned yourself a nice warm bath. And maybe a nice little bun.
Black Squadron!
It's 10:31 and 30 seconds. It's time for the news. Staying a little bit punky there with Richard Hell and the Voidoids, Black Generation. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. How you doing, listeners? Yeah, you okay? You well? Good. It's a little bit sunny here in London. Hope it's nice where you are. I got absolutely soaked on my bike yesterday. Went to the Steam Fair. Didn't see you at the Steam Fair, Joe Cornballs.
No, I'm sorry. I did explain to Mr. Cocker that I wouldn't be able to attend because I was otherwise engaged.
Was it good fun? For the National Autistic Society, we were down there in London, in Fulham. It was fun, but it was really rainy. It was kind of unfair, how rainy it was. And I felt sorry for the organisers. But still, everyone turned up. Harry Hill turned up and Jonathan Ross and Jarvis. And they were all there and lots of very nice people. Very nice to meet you if you were there yesterday. So it was fun. And it's a great fair, those Carter's Steam Fair. Places. Were you smiling?
I'm smiling. I'm reading one of these retro text the nations. I'm just chortling about the fun that's to come.
Yeah. It sounded like hospital radio, me saying it's a great fair.
It's an absolutely great fair.
That's a terrific fair.
Because they're all antique steam engines, and some of them are beautiful. The way they're kept is absolutely marvellous, and the paint.
I like the noise better. Now that's radio. Listen, it's RetroTix the Nation time. RetroTix the Nation. Were you ready for that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to do another.
Oh, well, don't. Okay. It's RetroTix the Nation time. This is the time when people who listen to the show via the podcast or via Listen Again can contribute to the previous week's Text the Nation, if that's clear. That's why it's called RetroTix the Nation. And of course, just to be serious for a moment, this section of the show does have one of the most incredible jingles ever. No, hang on, I think it's actually the most amazing jingle ever written. And I wrote it, and when I wrote it,
you wrote it.
I did write it. It's when I wrote it, right. I just had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I had no idea I was writing the greatest jingle, but yeah. You don't. And I was talking to Sir Paul McCartney the other day, and I was asking him whether he knew when he wrote some of those songs that they were what they were, and he said no, and that's, you know, and I said no. I said it's amazing because I didn't feel it either, and we got on really well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm
he was talking about yesterday, and you were saying, well, yes, RetroTix the Nation is the yesterday of jingles.
That is, but he brought it up. There's no way I would have started that conversation,
sure.
But he brought it up.
It's the most covered jingle, I'm sorry to say. Here is a message from Nicholas Cecil Montgomery Ward III, mailman.
He's very clever.
From Chelmsford in Essex.
Perceptive man.
He says, dear Professor Buxopheles and Dr. Cornucopia, my friend David works as an archivist at the Big British Castle, and he's recently discovered a remarkable and previously unheard demo recording of the Beatles from 1962, talking about Macca. However, I feel that this startling discovery may help to redress the animosity felt by Adam around the ongoing popularity of the RetroTix the Nation jingle. Well, let's have a look and or even a listen and see what he's on about.
I used to listen to Adam Joe, but I listened to the podcast and not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration, yeah.
Oh no!
Oh yeah! Because I couldn't join in with explanation, but now my problems have disappeared.
Because RetroTix the Nation is here.
I mean, that's very amusing, but that's not the Beatles.
Is it not?
No, that's fake. I mean, because I just wouldn't want you to diminish my true story about meeting Paul McCartney and us chatting with some bit of fakery. I mean, it's very good fake. Well done.
Well done, Nicholas.
That's beautiful.
Nicholas Ward, thank you so much for that. Although, you know, I don't think the Beatles ever did have a phase where they sang in broad Liverpudlian accents. I'm not sure about that. A Beatles expert could tell me. But let's get into RetroTix the Nation. Last week, we were talking about domestic decoration differences, the triple D, that divides so many happy households. You're in there, you're cohabiting with your partner or your wife or whoever you're cohabiting with. And
what is going on this morning?
I don't know.
It's like, no, that's what I call DJ voices. We've had everyone from your dad through to some kind of Radio 1 DJ now. What are we? Hospital radio.
I don't know. I'm someone who says yeah instead of your. I'm your kind of daytime, your fun DJ. Your DJ who says yeah in front of a lot of your things. So domestic decorating difference.
In front of a lot of your things.
You know, it's when you have a massive argument with your partner about how you're going to decorate your house. Is that clear enough?
Yeah.
Here we go. I'll start you off with one. Here is a message from...
This link's going to go on forever. It's been going on for about 5 minutes already, and we haven't even read one single message.
Here's one from Affy. He's a mailman.
Though recently mistaken for a woman by Joe, he says. He's in Bournemouth, I guess. Affy must have mailed in before.
Good story.
It's a fun story. He says, "Dear Buckles and Corn Nuts, some time ago I mentioned to an old lady friend that having recently used the bathroom at my parents' house, which is carpeted, I found it very cozy, and I would like to have a carpeted bathroom myself in the next place I lived. She found the idea appalling and unhygienic, claiming that bath water would spill out onto the carpet, and that men often miss the bill when urinating. I told her that this was nonsense. Nonsense! Nonsense! And that I never missed the bowl, whilst sober or otherwise, and she had been influenced by television into believing that this was a common occurrence. I also told her that at any rate you can put down mats around the toilet or bath, which can then be washed. But she wouldn't budge. She even told me that it would be a deal breaker if we moved in together. I found her vehement reaction quite surprising, so took to asking people I know about their feelings on the carpet in the bathroom. To my surprise, no one backed me, and everyone agreed that her bathroom carpeting bathroom carpeting is not a good idea, leaving me feeling isolated and unsure of myself. Is there something wrong with me?
Yes, let's move on. Yes, there is something wrong with him.
You're not going for the carpeting in the bathroom?
No,
who would? You'd have to be mental.
You want a wipe clean surface.
Of course you do.
You don't want a spongy surface that can absorb liquids and hairs.
And munch.
What?
That's one of your words, isn't it?
No, it certainly isn't. So he's on his own. But listen, don't feel isolated. What's his name?
Affy.
Affy, I'm sure there's a stinky woman out there for you. Here's one from Megan from Australia.
Oh, mate.
Dear Adam and Joe. That's good, isn't it?
Where's nice, the nice accent, mate?
Well, I'm not good. Shall I read that?
No, you don't have to. Okay. It's disrespectful.
My friend recently moved out with her boyfriend into a new apartment. All right, I'm going to do it. My friend recently moved out with her boyfriend into a new apartment. The place didn't come with curtains, so her boyfriend decided to hang his many football scarves over the windows. He thought it looked so good that they should stay there permanently so they wouldn't need to buy curtains.
Mate.
A great idea, football scarves,
nice
backlit.
Nice idea, mate.
Lovely. This obviously caused an argument, which my friend somehow lost when the plumber came over and said it looked awesome. It's absolutely hideous. Lots of love from Megan.
Megan, why is the plumber settling the arguments?
Well, because he's a plumber.
Right.
He has very earthy skills.
Yeah, you need an objective eye sometimes.
Exactly.
But you can't have the arguments settled by someone who doesn't even live in the place.
Football scarves for curtains? That sounds atrocious. They're sort of, they'd be illuminated on a sunny day.
Yeah, that's an absolutely rotten idea.
Hideous.
Here is a message right now from Andy in Cheltenham. Hey Andy, how you doing? He says, "Hello Captain Buckinghamshire and Lord Cornwallium."
Christ.
I work for one of the UK's largest building societies, and a few years back they had an advertising campaign. I was forcibly selected as the staff member to star in this campaign, which consisted of my massive head and shoulders and face taking up a whole poster with the tagline, "Come in and talk to me about savings." This was shown around the whole branch network, and my face was on nearly every high street in the south of England. It's long over now, and I managed to swipe a few of the massive posters, but my fiancé will not let me put up the poster as the main centrepiece of the wall in our living room. I insist on putting it up when we have friends and family round. But you have to understand, this is in a self-mocking, postmodern, ironic style, and definitely not a vanity thing. It collects dust now behind the sofa, and whenever it comes out, I get a look as if to say, put that up and I will surgically remove your cornballs. Please, will you tell my fiancé that this is a healthy and perfectly fine object to display in the living room to settle all future disputes? We're getting married in 2 weeks. This needs to be settled before the marriage can take place, in my opinion. Love you, bye! I mean, he's got a giant poster of himself. That's, surely you're allowed that in the front room.
I would allow that. Not everybody has a giant poster of themselves.
Well, exactly.
So there you go. We've decreed that he's right. He's allowed to have it.
You know, come and talk to me about savings. Certainly I will. I mean, that's great. Okay? So I would say to your soon-to-be lady wife, Andy, deal with it!
Let's have a record. We might do some more after this record. Let's have some music.
Yeah, this is Coldplay. I don't know if you've heard of them.
No?
They're a new band. They're very exciting. And they play very edgy kind of thrash. and thrash metal.
I don't think I'm going to like it.
Well, I think it's a fun sound. Here's Every Teardrop is a Waterfall. Coldplay, Every Teardrop is a Waterfall. You can listen again to Will Champion from Coldplay, who was on Steve Lamacq's Wednesday show here on Six Music. They were talking about the band's love of Glastonbury, which is good because they're playing there next weekend. So, you know, if they were talking about how much they loathed Glastonbury and everything about it and how uncomfortable it was and miserable, it would be a bit of a drag before they headlined there, don't you think?
Yes.
What's the weather going to be like, James?
Good.
Yeah. Do you reckon?
Yeah. I heard changeable. I heard changeable.
Tuesday gets better.
Tuesday?
It gets better.
Oh, this week. Sorry, yeah. Right, not the week after. Yeah. Changeable. Well, it's always changeable. There's going to be a few spits and spots and showers.
Changeable.
Showers and flowers. But it's not going to be the heat wave that it was last year, I guess. But as long as it's not a deluge. I loathe the deluge. Hey, should we pop back into Retro Texanation just for a little bit?
We got a couple of goodies. Some of my favourites are people who have huge, awful objects in their houses that their partners can't live with. For instance, David. He sent us a picture of his barbecue. And to describe his barbecue, he's got kind of fake skulls, human skulls.
Plaster skulls.
Plaster skulls. He's piled them up as if some terrible atrocity has happened and poured concrete over them, very thick concrete. It's a sort of a goth barbecue.
Yes.
Almost like a sacrificial altar.
It's a little like something they would have had in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yes. And David says, "Dear Adam and Joe, here's a picture of my barbecue. It's made of human skulls, spelt S-C-U-L-L-S, brackets, not real. My wife doesn't really like it. I made it while she was away. It's made of concrete. It's totally indestructible and immovable. And we don't have friends around for barbecues anymore. I love you, David. Kiss, kiss, kiss."
Oh, imagine the surprise his wife got when she got back.
I think that's the key is, if you're going to have a controversial object in your house, install it while your partner's away and pour concrete over it.
Yeah.
Make sure it's fused to the ground with thick concrete.
Do you think that when she got back, he immediately said, "Hey, come and look at this"? Or do you think he thought, "I'm going to be in trouble. I won't mention it just yet. I'll wait for her to find it"? I mean, either way, it would have gone badly.
I'd like to go for a barbecue at David's house. Imagine the nudity.
Well, it would be good if he did the barbecue sort of stripped to the waist with his body oiled. You know what I mean? A bit like the guy in the pirate anti-piracy commercial.
Yes.
Who's in his...
Yeah, and once you'd had forge. Your allocated hot dog, you would be branded with a small symbol on your forehead.
Yeah.
So you couldn't have seconds.
That's right. We got a message from Emma Bromley. She says, "Dear Adam and Joe, keeping it straight and formal."
Good.
Yeah. Every now and again, that's nice just to be
refreshing.
A bit refreshing and respectful. A few years ago, my husband got drunk and bought a 3-foot high stuffed beaver, which now stands in our front room. You can look at this. You can look at our beaver on Twitter at BBC Adam and Joe is our Twitter address. She continues, "I have tolerated it for a number of years, but now we have children, I feel it has become a bit of a health hazard, especially the pointy claws that are just about toddler eye height. I'm formulating a plan to banish it to the loft, where it'll join the set of Queen Russian dolls." That is the band Queen. Set of Russian dolls of Queen. Goodness sake. "The enormous letter M from a shop front, which is also up there, and the framed signed photograph from Nigel from EastEnders, which mysteriously never got unpacked when we moved houses. Kisses, Emma Bromley." And she says, by the way, the beaver cost £1,000.
Wow.
You have got to be steamed out of your mind to pay £1,000 for a big stuffed beaver, surely. And they've got a little fez on there as well, a nice little hat on the beaver. But as I say, you can check out a photograph of the beaver in its full glory on our Twitter.
I can see what's being said there. You don't want a stuffed creature with very sharp claws at toddler eye height.
No.
Do you really?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's asking for trouble.
Sure it is.
But at the same time, it is wearing a fez.
Yeah.
So I can see the quandary.
It's a little fun fella with a
fez. It's a fun fella. Bit of dangerous, edgy fun around the house. Get you on
right.
Your toes.
Anyway, thanks a lot for all your messages there. We might unpack a new Text the Nation basket later on in the programme. But for now, is this your free play, Joseph Cornish?
What is it?
Bit of Fine Young Cannibals.
Yeah, this is the Fine Young Cannibals. This is called Good Thing.
Pushing out into new sonic territory. That's the White Stripes. There's Icky Thump. Okay.
Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Hey, how you doing, listeners? Here's a message from David Doll. We had a couple of messages on this subject. Also got a message from Chris. Thanks for that, Chris. But I'm going to read out David's message. Dear Buckwheat and Cornucopia Balls, I was recently sitting down catching up on my podcasts and started listening to the Desert Island Discs, Your Desert Island Discs special. It went out on Saturday, the 11th of June, last weekend. It was a very enjoyable and only slightly tedious rundown of listeners' favourite discs for nearly 2 hours. Special studio guests were Miranda Sawyer, Paul Gambaccinoid, he says, and Howard Goodall. During the opening preamble, Howard and Gambo talk about their Beatles choices. Listen carefully, or not so carefully, to this clip where Gambo seems to vent his opinion of Howard's Beatles choice with a clearly audible airborne toxic event. It must be Gambo, he says, as it comes from the left speaker where Gambo is positioned. In case you hadn't... In case you can't find said podcast, I've sent you a clip. Dirty Gambo, he says. Thanks very much, David Doll. Now, I immediately heard this clip. It is a very audible airborne toxic event. And the first thing I did was go and verify it, listen to the podcast and make sure that it was actually the show that was broadcast and not just a noise that he'd stuck in for his own amusement. Have a listen to this clip.
Because John Peel had said that he knew he'd met the right woman when she said her favorite track off Revolver was And Your Bird Can Sing. And I thought, a lovely thought, and it cheers me up. But now I would just say, hey, Jude.
After all that, Howard, you chose a Beatles track. You chose We Can Work It Out.
Yes, yeah. I chose that because it's one of the tracks that Lennon and McCartney truly wrote together, which is quite rare, in fact, in the Beatles catalogue. And because the idea of working it out seemed very British.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's quite a loud,
very loud, isn't
toxic
it?
Event, isn't it? And I've done nothing to that clip. I haven't, like, beefed up the sound of that or anything. That is how it was broadcast at 100%.
Creaky chair?
Creaky chair. Have a little listen, because we got in touch with the we got in touch with Miranda Sawyer, who was on the show, and she doesn't remember it happening. So she, you know, people in the studio weren't aware of it at the time. Sarah Taylor, who is the Desert Island Discs producer, says, I am 100% convinced the sound, rather than being from a bottom, is in fact a mouth snort from Paul Gambaccini.
Gambaccini mouth snort.
Gambaccini mouth snort. So that's what Sarah is going for.
Let's listen again.
Let's have another little listen.
It's one of the tracks that Lennon and McCartney truly wrote together, which is quite rare.
That is no way a mouth snort. Now, I was listening to the panning, though, and...
this is like the Patterson footage of Bigfoot. You've got to try and replicate it.
Or the Zapruder footage.
Isn't it?
I'm thinking the only possible explanation is maybe a fifth farter. you know?
On the grassy knoll. Yeah, I mean, it's very loud, which is... You know, I kind of think that's a bit anomalous. Why is it so loud if it's, as you know, further away from the mic as the posterior is?
This is exactly what the Desert Island Discs team was saying. You know, they were saying, well, it's not going to be a nether regions toxic event because there's no mics down there. So how are you going to get that?
Could be a mic stand?
No. One more listen, James. That is not a mic stand. That is no way a mic stand.
It's one of the tracks that Lennon and McCartney truly wrote together, which is quite rare.
I mean, wow, that's terrible, though, because
it might be
a big show. It was the big anniversary show, wasn't it? And it's an important show. How could that be?
Yeah.
I mean, that, do you think, if that Gambaccini? Wow, I think we should give that footage to Monster Fart Quest or Unexplained... Fart stories.
I think Oliver Stone is making a film about it.
Is he?
Yeah, trying to figure out who it was. His theory is that it's a fifth farter. But
really?
A lot of people think it's Gambo.
Yeah.
I just don't think... Gambo's too professional for that kind of thing. I mean, there is a chance that it was just some creepy...
Should I tell you what it is? I think they were all laughing a bit earlier, weren't they?
Yeah.
And that they became relaxed.
Yeah.
Everyone was a bit too relaxed.
Sure.
And, you know,
yeah,
just the inevitable happened.
Toxic event time. Okay, here's some music. Is it a bit? Yeah,
good. What is it?
It's delight. I just want to go back and erase that little introduction I just did there. Here's a bit. It's a bit. And now I'm making it worse by talking about it. This is Groovers in the Heart. Boo, 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 boo. Somewhere, I've got a video of us dancing around like buffoons to that. Myself, Joe, and young Louis Theroux when we were age 20. Something like that.
Something like that.
It's a long time ago, 1990 or something. I would put it on YouTube, but I think it might run into problems with the music, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm just a little distracted because we're getting lots of texts about the airborne toxic event.
Sure. What kind of theories are circulating there?
Stephen Chicken says it's definitely a mouth noise.
No.
You need to get a bit of nasal phlegminess onto it too, though. I'm also sure it's on the inhale, not the exhale. Therefore, I believe he's clearing his nose by sucking the smog down the back of his throat.
No. It's nothing like that. Can we have a quick listen?
It's one of the tracks that Lennon and McCartney truly wrote together, which is quite rare.
That would have to be a full-on raspberry, which would be a very immature thing to do during such a stately and important programme.
Yeah.
I think we need... If you're a sound scientist... I know we have many sonic scientists listening to this show.
Sure.
Do a kind of Oliver Stone stroke John Travolta in Blowout, suggests Gary. Do an analysis of it and see if you can figure out what it is. Slow it down, examine the waveform.
We were thinking...
Compare it to other famous toxic events from history.
Sure. We were thinking possibly if they have leather seats in the studio and one of the guests, maybe Goodall's got his leather trousers on or his leather pants.
Yeah, well, we were picturing Gambo maybe in a kind of a faux leather flight jacket.
Yeah.
But we can find out. Well, we're going to find out what the seats are made of in that studio. This is a very important thing that's happening here. You know, somebody...
It's an important... It's
like a very important programme.
Desert
and
Island
it's...
Disc, that's more or less the flagship
the anniversary.
Show of the...
It's the founding stone of the BBC and someone has ridiculed it and compromised it. Therefore, they must be brought to justice and we are relying on you, our listenership, to help us get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, exactly. Quite literally. Okay. So listen, folks, I think it's time we had some eggcorns, don't you? Because people continue to send these in to the extent that I have created a new jingle. That's always a fun thing, isn't it? Because it officially becomes a segment. Even though this is our last studio-bound show for this current run of the programme. We're going to be in Glastonbury next weekend, of course. I thought it would be nice to get this in here to make it an official eggcorn compartment. So here we go with the new jingle.
Somebody's been eardropping on me, and now I'm suffering their strings and arrows, can't you see? I was standing on the curve like a jester of goodwill, but now I'm curled up in the feeble position still because of my eggcorns. When it comes to eggcorn business, eggcorns, I'm like farmer hecking Christmas. Eggcorn. The pop will call the kettle back. Eggcorn. Cause it's an eggcorn attack.
Got some eggcorns incorporated in the lyrics.
Very
there.
Good.
And you remember we were talking about scary guttural voices last week, and I was sort of speculating as to where that started. We got a message from Ollie and Jessamine, aka Oggs and Pod. Hi, Joe 90 and Buxton. A good friend of mine and brilliant musician, Justin K. Broderick, original founder of Napalm Death and now Jesus/Godflesh, was one of the first people to sing in that scary, demonic, crazed voice. It's widely considered that he actually invented it. I'm sure that's a controversial point of view and we'll get loads of messages going, no, actually it was Gary Grunty.
They won't be in that voice, though.
Might be. Anyway, he says...
I think you'll find I invented that voice.
Thanks very much, Ollie and Jessamine. So, yeah, eggcorns. We got a few of these through this week. Here's one to kick things off from Paolo in London's Cruel Centre. He says, fella boys, whilst working at the Royal Festival Hall at the turn of the millennium, I had a bar manager who used an incredible array of language, a kind of grab bag of phrases that he never quite mastered nor understood. One day he asked me where I'd left the tubs of ice cream that we used to sell at the intervals. I said they were on the top level, in the fridge. He went all the way to the top floor to retrieve them. Only then did I realize I had the key to the fridge. He returned after about 5 minutes. So vast is that huge building, it takes ages to get around, and he was absolutely fuming. He shouted, "You deliberately sent me on a wild goof trek!" I now use that term exclusively in place of the original. It's so much better. The same manager also used to shout "Flaming Laura" whenever he was upset. "You've sent me on a wild goof trek."
Flaming Laura.
Oh, Flaming Laura.
He's brilliant. Here's one from a chap called Nick Cheese. I don't think his surname is Cheese. I think he just works in some sort of cheese-related business. A friend of mine recently said, when walking into our messy office, "Oh, looks like a bombsy tit."
What?
Looks like a bombsy tit. To which we all fell about laughing. He said that was what his mum always used to say about his bedroom. And then we got another email slightly later from Sean Buckley, which says, "Darlings..." Yeah, not going to read that. It calls us quite rude names. It says, "Throughout my childhood, my mum used to tell me that my room looked like a bummer's at it. Then, when I was about 12, she said, 'Your room looks like a bomb has hit it.' And that was that." So maybe that's the same guy.
So he thought that there was an actual thing called a bomber's at it.
Bomber's at it, yes. And then the other one is bombsy tit. I don't know quite what's going on there, listeners. I'll leave you to figure that out.
"Your room looks like a bomber's at
it." No, it's not. It's a bombsy tit, ma'am. I don't know why I read that in an Australian accent as well. A bombsy tit sounds like something they might have. I don't know, an old crashed aeroplane.
Oh, mate, look at your bombsy tit. That's nice. Is that a new one? Here's a message from Jeremy, that is, a mailman from Black Squadron in Bristol. And he says, "Dear old Dirty Buckle and Jake Horn, whilst out walking with my girlfriend Tess the other day, we passed a man, at which point I said, 'Oh, I think that was Terry Nutkins.' At which point she asked me, 'The one from the Beatrix Potter books?' At realising what she'd said, she then laughed for 10 minutes. And then when she could catch her breath, she said, 'I mean Lord of the Rings.' Love you, bye."
What? Terry Nutkins from...
So he says, "I think that was Terry Nutkins." And she goes, "What, the one from the Beatrix Potter books?" And then she goes, "Oh, no. I mean Lord of the Rings."
Yes. What's he called, Nutkins? There is a Nutkins character in... he's not called
Squirrel
Terry,
Nutkins.
Is he? Squirrel Nutkins.
Yeah.
Is, so it's he, an understandable is Squirrel mistake. Nutkins in Lord of the Rings?
Nah.
You sure? He might be in one of those crowd scenes at the back.
He might be. Terry Nutkins might be in the back there, as far as I know. I've got a whole list of quickfire ones here. This is a nice little list that's been sent in by Matt. He's a bloke man. And Matt says, "A&J, over the years I've documented the spoonerisms, malapropisms and faux pas of a chap in my office. Here is a very brief selection. You've completely missed the wrong end of the stick. If push comes to crunch, I couldn't see the trees for looking. You need to make a stance. Don't jump your horses."
I like that one. That one could be good.
Yeah.
That could actually go into circulation.
It's time to put the foot to the metal.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get the ball moving. And we can't argue pedantics all day.
Ooh. Why not? I love arguing pedantics.
Oh, we can't argue pedantics all day, so don't jump your horses and get your foot to the metal. Thanks very much there. That's Matt. Have you got any more there, Jay Korn?
Yeah, I do. Do you want to hear them?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. I heard a cracking egg corn the other day whilst talking to my girlfriend. We were discussing the difficulties in getting a job when she said, "I know, it's doggy dog out there." As opposed to dog eat dog. I thought this was hilarious and never planned to ever, ever, ever let her forget it.
Although
lots of love, Sam, a female man.
Female man.
From Brighton.
Nice. My favourite kind of man. That is why Snoop called his album Doggy Dog World, though, isn't it?
Maybe.
That was that pun. Finally, from me, Ilse. Hey, Ilse. He's a regular communicator with the show. He's a he chap. Says he just communicates a little conversation that took place with his mate and his mate's girlfriend. "Which do you prefer, red wine or white wine?" "Well, that's a real bowl of contention."
Now, that's weird, because we just had a text in that said exactly the same one. I wonder if it's the same person.
That's got to be a common one, though, isn't
Pete,
it?
Pete says, "Pete, a guy I work with regularly uses the phrase a bowl of contention instead of bone."
Yeah.
Says Pete.
That is a real bowl
that's
of contention.
It's a common one, mate.
"Oh, mate, you've got a massive bowl of contention. Can I have some of that?" "No, it's mine!" Okay, here's a bit of music right now. So there you go, that's Egg Corns for this week, all right?
You can contribute to Egg Corns too. The text number is 64046, but it's best done via email, adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk.
Here's Sleigh Bells. This is Real Real. There you go. They're from Brooklyn in New York City. That's Sleigh Bells with Rill Rill, out next week, 27th of June. Their debut album, Treats, is out now. Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. I've got a free play coming up, and I was listening a while back to one of Mark Riley's excellent shows, and I know that he is quite a massive Deep Purple fan. Do you ever get into the Purps, Joe?
No, I've never really got into the Purps.
I mean, the Purps are one of those kind of big clownish heavy metal bands. Well, a legendary, obviously. And the thing is that much Spinal Tap folklore is based, or rather, much Spinal Tap is based on kind of Deep Purple folklore. The whole Stonehenge thing is a Purps thing. And I've had Deep Purple's greatest hits in my CD collection for years and years and years and years. I got it because of the track Burn, which I absolutely love. My friend Tom Hardiman got me into that. Thanks, Tom! But here's another track that I discovered via one of Mark Riley's shows. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. Check out the organ solo in this. I think it's from 1972 from their album Fireball. This is Deep Purple. From 1972. That's amazing! Deep Purple with Fireball. Check out that organ solo.
Some particularly powerful tambourine going on there as well.
That's great. I owe that to Mark Riley, for turning me onto that. He's back on air from 7 on Monday here on BBC Six Music. This is Adam and Joe, though. It's 11:30, just gone 11:30, and it's time for the news. That's the Gorillaz with On Melancholy Hill. Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Hey, how you doing? Now, the other day, I was out in the Jardin de Max Factor.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of, nettles.
They're a problem in the countryside, in the English countryside.
Man.
They're very prolific.
They are prolific as all heckins. And it only takes a couple of weeks for them to decide that it's time for them to go all prolific on your ass. Mm. You know, literally... 1 week, there'll be nothing there, and the winter will be finally put to bed, and the spring comes around, and then suddenly it gets a tiny bit warmer. Nettles! Everywhere.
Yes, they're the scourge, aren't they? They're there to teach children that nature is dangerous.
What the heck is the point of the nettle?
Just what I said.
To teach children that nature is dangerous.
Yeah, they're sort of harmless.
That's what you're saying, is it?
Yeah, they're kind of... It's like it's like the thin end of the lethal nature wedge.
Right, okay.
You know Herzog could do a documentary on nettles.
Nettles. The evil, the most evil.
They want to kill you.
They revel in murder. I was trying to clear away, and I got obsessed with the idea of combating.
They revel in murder.
I got obsessed with the idea of combating the nettle scourge, right?
Because right, trying to clean them out.
Yeah, there was one area that's totally... We had it as a nice little bonfire area. Mm-hmm. And we had some big logs that were out there, like half
logs. I bet you did.
And we were sat out there just a few weeks ago. Me and my brother and my dad were sat out there like mountain men. Sharing,
the nettles hated you doing that.
Sharing tall tales.
They were lurking in the weeds watching you.
Yeah.
Whispering. As soon as you went indoors, they started growing up.
Now, they're like waist height now. I mean, they're absolutely huge.
They're furious with you.
The thing about the nettles is that if you have the protective clothing and the correct gloves, you can uproot them very satisfyingly easily. Like you pop them out and all their roots come out and you're like, yeah.
They have poisonous hairs.
They do have
They're like a hirsute man with poisonous hairs.
Don't you mean hirsute?
Oh, damn it. I got it so wrong, I got it right.
They are hirsute. They're deadly hirsute. How do they work? Let's see. They have hollow stinging hairs called trichomes.
Trichomes, that's right.
On their leaves and stems, which act like hypodermic needles.
Steady on.
That inject histamine and other chemicals that produce a stinging sensation.
They act like hypodermic needles. They're suggesting they penetrate the skin.
Correct.
I thought they just brushed against it.
No, penetrate skin.
Do they?
Like hypodermic needle.
Really?
Yes, they go into your skin.
OMG.
And that is why, and here's some top tips for what to do. I went and searched for how to avoid being stung by a nettle or dealing with nettle stings.
Well done.
First top tip on WikiHow was move away from the nettles to a nearby area to prevent being stung again. What's that? Don't go so close to the nettles.
My technique is usually to press my face into the nettle.
Well, that's why I've been going wrong. Yeah, exactly. I've been wandering around with my shorts on. Don't do that. Go to somewhere where there are no nettles.
Good tip.
A more practical tip, pour a small amount of water on the ground, only enough to create mud, and apply the mud to the sting.
I thought you were going to say scorn. Pour a small amount of scorn on the nettles.
I don't think scorn works on nettles.
Really?
It's one of the only things that scorn doesn't actually have any
What was the piece of advice then? Pour some
water on the ground to create some mud, and then apply mud to the sting. Wait for it to dry, then brush it off.
Hopefully, What about this?
It will remove the stingers with it.
This seems very long-winded. I thought, isn't there a thing where if you just grab a nettle with confidence,
yes,
and gusto, it won't sting you?
That's right.
You psych the nettle out.
Yeah, well, presumably, if we are thinking of it in terms of these little hypodermic needles, presumably you're sort of deflecting them. You're not allowing them to penetrate your skin.
If you meet them with equal and greater force,
yes,
you bend the needle.
You're just sort of bashing the needle, right. Final top tip, apply adhesive tape to the infected area, then remove. Most of the stinging hairs will be pulled out of the skin. It's all about removing these stingers.
The nettles stay in your skin.
They stay in the skin. Who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew?
Who the heck knew? What wasn't I told about the stingers in the skin? Why now?
So the other day I was combating the net owls and I had a lot of protective gear on, but I got so obsessed with winning that I started getting stung quite badly, more and more and more, and then I was just, I don't care, I'm going to kill you hecking nettles. And I went in there, and in the end I came out and my arms were just ballooned, red, covered in horrible sort of pockmarked stings.
Were your arms bare? Were they nude?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, that was a mistake, mate.
I put goggles on.
But what about dock leaves? We should mention dock leaves as well. Because nature slaps and strokes.
Exactly.
It slaps you with the stingers and then it strokes you with the dock leaves. And they always grow nearby.
It's so weird.
It's very balanced. Isn't it?
What's nature thinking?
What is nature thinking?
Just to give you a little smack and then, yeah, oh, there's a dock leaf there, stop complaining. I've done a little song about nettles.
Have you?
Yeah, in the style of my, well, I've done it.
You're not going to play it, are you?
Yeah, it's so short.
You've bought it in?
It's short. Yeah, I do this thing, Country Man, which is on, I've given it a plug before on the show. Hope you don't mind if I do again. It's on the BBC's comedy website and sometimes my YouTube channel. Subscribe, why not? It's all right, it's not a money-making venture. I'm not violating any rules. This is my song about nettles.
Nettles, nettles, painful plant, so close to my heart. Nettles, like the band for bodies, the sting is an integral part. Nettles, also like the band for bodies, Stuart Copeland is their drummers. Nettles, also like the band for bodies, they're blooming using Andy Summers. Nettles, also like the band for police, they recently reformed and went to touring. Nettles, but unlike the band for police, nobody will pay to see the nettles.
I didn't say it was good.
It was good. It was very good.
I just said it was about nettles.
Wow.
Right. So can we kind of weave some kind of text the nation into this? Like battles with nature somehow, you know, nature nightmares?
Nature nightmares. We'll have to have a little think about that.
War with nature.
Can we have a record and think about it?
Nature war.
You're not letting us have a record.
Nature war. This is Arcade Fire with Speaking in Tongues. Good stuff. Well done, Arcade Fire with Speaking in Tongues. So I think we're going to fire off the Text the Nation jingle and just very briefly set out our stall. Why the heck not? Here it is.
Text the Nation. Text, text, text. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
So you boiled it down there to what there?
Nature war.
Nature war. So times when you go for a wonderful walk or a ramble or a frolic in nature, in God's garden, with a big smile on your face, you go gamboling and skipping into some natural area and then something rears its ugly head to tell you to get out.
Nature pops up and slaps you right in the face off.
Not looking for nasty things. Wow. Yes, we are.
Yeah, a little bit.
So what else?
It doesn't have to be you've gone out rambling. It's just any kind of skirmish, scuffle that you've had with nature.
With nature.
Do you ever listen to Gardener's Question Time?
Sometimes a little bit.
Oh, you know, only when things go wrong. That's how I listen to it. Sometimes you're trapped with it. I mean, obviously, I know it's a great show.
It's a great show, no disrespect. But we're not mutually interested in gardening that much. I listen to it long enough to realise what it is.
It's not my preferred show. I'm not so mad keen a gardener that I really absolutely have to listen to it. So when it comes on and there's absolutely nothing else on and it's...
But it's a fantastic show and we wouldn't want to undermine
obviously,
its legacy.
Never want to undermine the legacy of the Gardener's Question Time. But oh boy, it goes on and on and on. And my favourite part of it, though, when I start perking up and thinking, hey, this is a bit more fun, is when people have questions about unruly plants and when the roots go crazy and go underneath people's fences and stuff. And how do I...
When nature fights
this?
Back.
You know, when nature goes absolutely nuts on your ass.
Yeah. That's good subject. Nature war.
Yeah, nature war.
Get those messages coming in.
You know... Yeah, any kind of battles you've had with nature, all right?
Text is 64046. Email is adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk.
Though, are we?
What?
We're not talking about animals, though.
A plant.
We're talking about the natural kingdom.
Plants and insects. Are we talking about insects? You're talking about plants.
We're talking about mainly plants.
Because animals and insects come under the subheading of nature.
They do, don't they?
They do.
They do, do, do.
So are you talking about plant war?
Mainly.
Specifically, like triffid encounters.
Am I? What do you think?
Well, what's the plant from Little Shop of Horrors called? Oh. It's a lady's name. Daphne or something.
Oh, no,
that kind of thing.
Put me on the spot.
That kind of thing.
What, the plant from Little Shop of Horrors?
Yeah.
Triffids. You battled with
Is that the kind
Have
of
you
thing?
Battled with fictional deadly plants? Is that Texanation?
Yes, no, that would be good for me. I'd like that.
Nature war! Interpret it how you wish.
There
right
you
now.
Go.
You've got
now,
a free play.
I saw a couple of sneaky peek films this week.
Did you?
I saw a terrifying film called Kill List.
Kill List? What's
directed
that?
By Ben Wheatley.
Oh, yeah.
It was terrifying.
Was it?
And very violent, but very brilliant.
Yeah.
It was a sneaky peek. I recommend it.
Good old Wheatles.
Very scary. I also saw a film directed by Dexter Fletcher.
Right.
Who I met this week.
Yeah.
That was quite exciting to meet Dexter Fletcher.
Sure, from Press Gang.
Quite exciting, very exciting.
Yeah.
I followed his career since Bugsy Malone.
Absolutely. I was in a film with him.
Were you?
Yeah.
Were you? What
Stardust.
Was that then? Of course. And he's directed a film called Wild Bill. It's very good. It stars Charlie Creed Miles. It's a sort of an urban western.
Yeah.
It was ruddy good, and it had some great music on it, including this track that I haven't heard for yonks. This is Aaron Neville. With Hercules. Wow, that sounds like a 90s record. Is that a new record or an old record?
That's from their 1999 album,
there
Vertigo.
You go.
So it's the end of the 90s. That track was featured in which amazing films, Joe Cornish?
Oh, amazing
films. Two of the best films ever made.
Two of the best films ever made. Weekend at Bernie's, Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Oh, very close.
Very close, mate.
Very close, mate.
What?
It's a Sandra Bullock's film.
Oh, The Net. I mean, that is the most amazing film ever made.
So many amazing films to choose from when you get to Bullock.
Okay, Miss Congeniality's
yes,
1 and 2.
Yes, Bongo!
Yeah.
That track popped up in Miss Congeniality. The film's so good, they made it again and then turned it into a stage show as well, didn't they?
Hooray!
Hooray!
That would be a good Text the Nation, like big West End versions of stupid films, because that's all the rage, isn't it? There's a Shrek one.
Sure, there is.
There's a
is.
Private Function one. That's supposed to be very good, the Private Function one.
Richard Blackwood is in Shrek.
That's
playing
right.
The Eddie Murphy part.
Good for him.
He's finally achieved.
What's going
now?
On? There's
What's
noises.
There, James?
We are entering the
Oh.
We have successfully passed through the moon barrier.
Ooh.
Wow,
that
ever
happens.
Since we challenged James to put the moon barrier in the very centre of the podcast last week,
I forgot
which
what it
he
was.
Did, amazingly,
yeah.
He's taking his responsibility very seriously.
Sure he is. I couldn't work out what was happening. I was like, James has lost his mind. But yes, the other film, of course, was, I say of course, Gone in 60 Seconds.
Of course.
I mean, that is a film, isn't it?
That's a film.
That's
yeah,
an actual
that's
film.
A remake. It's a film.
Yeah.
So listen, I went to see a magic show this week.
Did you?
I went to see Darren Brown's Svengali.
Yes, I saw that a few months back in Norwich.
You did, didn't you?
Yeah, I loved it.
And then you had the man himself round to your house for tea, isn't that right?
How do you know that?
Because someone told me. You told me.
Did I?
That's exciting. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
But I went to see his show, and the problem with going to see the Darren Brown show Svengali is one cannot say anything about it.
No, Darren is very explicit and asks politely at the beginning of the show for people not to talk about it afterwards.
One is sworn to secrecy, and I'm going to respect that, swearings.
So not so good for a radio chat.
Not so good for radio chat, but I was there with television documentarian Louis Theroux, and he enjoyed it. Was that the name drop voice?
Yeah.
And he enjoyed it very much, and we were chatting afterwards. But I noticed something that Louis wouldn't let go.
He just wanted to know how everything was done.
He had to know how it was all done. And he had that look on his face when confronted by a particularly intransigent racist, for instance. Like, what? I have to get to the... What is your problem? I have to get to the bottom of this. He would not let it go.
Yeah.
And so we spent a long time trying to dissect how the tricks were done, but... You know, I used to be a very bad magician as a teenager. I used to make money by doing magic at children's parties.
Mr. Magico was amazing, let me tell you, listeners.
He was amazing. I've seen him doing myself down. But there's no way, you know, I don't know how Darren does a lot of it. But I've reached a point where, having read a bit about magic, I know that that's not the most rewarding path to follow.
No, because the truth is always far more banal than...
Well, plus the truth is it's magic. You know, and he has creepy psychic powers.
That is true, isn't it?
And so you don't want to mess with it. You don't want to go too close to it because it's dangerous. You should just assume that it's magic and enjoy the effect. Like, this guy is psychic. He can read minds. He does understand. He can guess the numbers and things and what one is the one with the bullet in it and stuff.
Yeah.
He can do all that. So the thing to enjoy is the effect that he produces with that skill.
Yes.
And how he dramatizes it and stages it.
It's a compulsion, a feeling that I think a lot of people have when they come out of that show. I just need to know how that was done, otherwise it's going to blow my mind.
But you can pretty much divide people down the middle with people who will just enjoy the moment and people who have to know.
Well,
I even experienced that as a young rubbish magician.
Yeah.
As Mr. Magico, you used to get kids at parties who did not enjoy the spectacle. It made them angry.
Yeah.
It sort of confronted them. They just couldn't handle the fact that they weren't being told the secret.
I talked about this before on the radio, but the same thing happened with us. Do you not remember that hot night when we were revising for our history O levels?
Oh, you couldn't let go.
And I couldn't let go because you did a thing with spongy red balls. I was like, yeah, that was good, Mr. Magico. How did you do it? He's like, I'm not going to tell you. So come on, just tell me. No, I'm not going to tell you. Like, seriously, tell me how you did it with a spongy ball. No, I'm not going to tell you.
So how would you distinguish those people? Is it like
furious.
It's like concrete thinking versus plastic thinking?
Well,
does that exist?
Yeah.
You're a concrete one.
I'm a concrete one. Maybe, yeah, a literal-minded person. Perhaps I'm very literal-minded. I can't speak for Louis, but... I was able to ride out my, determination to find out how it was all done. You know, because Darren was saying some people go online and they collude with each other to kind of establish...
Silly business. It's magic and you should just enjoy it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fantastic show.
It is.
It was wicked.
It is literally wicked. He's got a devil's tail on the poster. It's involved with the devil on the poster.
It's scary.
Yeah, it's great.
That's the end of that, though. Do check it out if you get the chance to. It's very good.
Here's the Rolling Stones. Have you seen your mother baby standing in the shadows?
I have.
Traveling tales, tales of traveling on the train or an automobile or an aeroplane. I want to know what your traveling tales.
All aboard the Skylark!
If Coldplay don't play that at Glastonbury, I'm going to be very, very angry.
What, your jingle?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Come on, Chris Martin, because that is a classic song.
Absolutely. Well, why would they do that and not the Retro Text the Nation jingle? What sort of a noise is that?
Dismissive.
It's a very stupid noise. It's a very stupid, stupid, disrespectful noise. Next, you'll be farting during the Desert Island Disc special.
I wouldn't be that disrespectful.
How dare you insult the legacy?
How dare you? Here is a message from Peter from Bournemouth. Actually, no, sorry. It is Stephen Paul Shepherdson. I'll get to you later, Peter. He says, Dear Bucks Adamton and Cor Jonish.
What do you think about this thing
about
that's happened?
The name mangling?
Yeah.
It's
good.
It's good.
It's good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
I'm happy with it.
Never the same one twice.
Never the same one twice. Lots of cornucopias. But anyway, Bucks Adamanton and Joe Corjonish. He's done a bit of spoonerizing. I was recently on an aeroplane with my lovely wife, reluctantly returning home from a wonderful holiday. I'd been given an aisle seat, which was fine by me. I thought I could still glance across out of the window and watch the clouds float by. However, every time I turned my head, the man next to me was leaning over with his nose pressed against the little window, totally obscuring it. All I could see was the large lump of Brill cream congealed on the back portion of his hair. At the time, this infuriated me, as the little joy a flight has to offer was totally lost. Now, was he being selfish, or does the owner of the window seat automatically have full window rights? What are your valued opinions?
So,
Stephen Paul.
Stephen
Shepherd
is saying that this person, the passenger next to him, blocked the window for the whole journey.
Yeah, the window seat and his face was mashed right up against it, staring down at the clouds there.
Really?
So what do you do about that? Is that on? Are you within your rights to say, excuse me, could I have a little bit of window time? I mean, I know I'm on the aisle, but still.
It depends if the captain announces that there's an extraordinary view.
Which sometimes they do.
Ladies and gentlemen, you might like to know that we're flying over the Grand Canyon, a spectacular view of the Grand Canyon outside the right-hand windows of the plane. Immediately everybody jumps up. The plane tips to the right because all the weight's gone over to the right.
Go right into the Grand
Canyon. That happened when I was on the plane the other week.
Did it?
Yeah. And I was very good. I sat back. I had a little look, then I sat back in my seat and let everyone else peer.
Yeah, that's nice.
You've got to share the view.
Sure.
But I think maybe that man was having psychological problems if he spent the entire flight staring at clouds. And I think that, who is it, Steve?
Steve.
Should be a little more empathic towards this person's mental state. Because Steve is on the aisle, am I right?
Yeah.
So he has access to the lavvy. He has first dibs on the fun trolley.
It shouldn't ruin your entire flight if you can't look out the window.
It shouldn't.
I mean, maybe the guy as well was staring at some kind of gremlin ripping out engines
exactly
on the wing.
Yeah,
that could have been
Twilight Zone style.
So yeah, I think if you haven't got the window seat, tough luck buster. All right,
decision made. It's gone against the correspondent for once.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Tough love. Here's a message we got from, oh, this is very long, but it's quite good. Rob Ryan. Dear Adam and Joe, for my birthday my wife Lorna bought me a pair of these really expensive noise-reducing headphones. I was making a journey from London to Leeds in first class, thinking to myself I'd have a nice time doing stuff on my laptop, listening to some music with my cool new headphones.
Doesn't get better than that.
So far, so good. I was really enjoying the coffee and biscuits when I felt that I might possibly need to fart. Now, I have to explain to listeners that this is quite a fart-based piece of correspondence, so if you find that unsettling or unclean, you might like to look away. There will be quite detailed mention of farting coming up. To continue the letter.
Airborne toxic event is the proper technical term.
I'll use that. At this point, I should explain that I'm 48 years old, and since hitting 40, my need to unleash airborne toxic events has reached endemic proportions. I had no idea that my middle-aged years would be so gassy. Basically, I fart all day long. Anyway, the seat was nice and soft for good sound absorption, so I thought I might just ease a little silent one out and get away with it. Success! 20 minutes later, the need came again. Could I risk it twice? I did. I succeeded. The journey continued pretty much in this vein, farting silently every 10 minutes. Until about 5 minutes from reaching my destination, I started packing my stuff away, took off my headphones. Just before we reached the station, I felt the need to do it again. No problem, I thought. These luxuriously soft first-class leather seats are perfectly designed to muffle any rear-end noises. And adopting the same technique again, I very gently released a toxic event. The rasping noise that issued was deafening. I'd forgotten I was wearing my noise-excluding headphones. I'd been letting off explosive guffs all the way from London to Yorkshire whilst merrily grooving and nodding along to my music. Classy. My fellow passengers looked up at me with a contempt reserved only for the type of imposter who thinks that he can travel first class and fart continuously throughout a two-hour journey.
What a monster.
Yours, Rob Ryan.
Rob, sort your life out.
We've all been there. Have we?
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't.
A little bit.
But you've been there. I mean, I may have been there on a plane.
Yeah.
But I, fingers crossed, the noises on, the noise of the air system on a plane and everyone's
absolutely
got their headphones on.
Oh, you can go for
but
your life with
chilling.
Impunity.
That's chilling.
That is chilling. Similar thing happened to me the other day when I was riding in what I thought was an empty carriage.
Mm.
And I had a luxuriant, explosive, toxic event.
Mm.
And looked behind me when I got up to leave, and there was a lady sat right behind
me. A lady being sick into her handbag.
Sat right behind me in the thing, looking at me with a revulsion.
Thank you, Rob Ryan. He also says, P.S., my favourite part of the show is when you talk Australian.
Mate.
I love that, mate. I think he's the only one.
I've got a special
so
treat for you now then,
for
mate.
You, Rob.
Because this is from Tom Lemesure, a male man from Winchester, but living in Rio.
John Lemesure.
Tom.
Let's pretend it's John.
Okay. Isn't that cool, though? He's living in Rio. He's probably in a carnival
salsa.
Right now. Salsa. salsa. Dear Belt Buckle and Corn Cakes, this happened a few years ago. I was on a very busy commuter train heading out of London at the end of a long day at work. There was no air conditioning and a lot of people were having to stand as the train was so overcrowded. A middle-aged guy in a suit started writing a text on his phone, but he had the ketones on. So every single key press he made was accompanied by a beep sound. We were all putting up with it in what I think is probably a very English manner, i.e. hating him but too scared to say anything. Suddenly, an Australian guy said to him, "Hey, I've had a long day at work listening to phones and computers and people talking. Turn that phone off." Well, perhaps you can imagine the entire carriage went silent to see what would happen next. The guy with the phone stammered, I'm just going to finish this message. But the Aussie guy said, "No! If I hear another noise from that phone, I'm going to take it and throw it out the window." There was a stunned silence. The aggressive Aussie had scared the bejesus out of everyone. He had broken the passive-aggressive rules in a very weird way. And in a very weird way, I ended up feeling almost sorry for the texter. "Okay, love you, bye," says Tom LeMessurier. So the Aussie guy took control.
Wow.
How would you feel? Would you be pro-Aussie in that situation?
I don't really know, to be perfectly honest. I mean, in a danger situation where the Aussie maybe had to rescue somebody, then maybe you would, you know, that would be the right thing to do, to take command like that. But I don't know. I think that's crossing a line.
Is it?
Isn't it?
It's aggressive, isn't it?
I mean, he has authority because he's Australian.
Yeah.
A certain cultural superiority.
He's got a scarier voice.
Yes.
"Mate, no!
If there's a simplicity and a directness to the Aussies, you don't mess with them."
No, exactly. If you... I'm going to...
You were going to what?
I was just going to say a load of really lame, offensive stuff about kookaburras. But I'm not going to now.
Good. Thank God for that. Is that enough travelling tales?
Let's have some music right now. This is Anna Calvi with Desire.
Ooh. Who was that then?
Anna Calvi.
It was good.
She's statuesque.
I can see the next record that's coming up. Is that a free play?
Mate,
I'm excited about that.
I'm going to say a little bit about that.
Are you going to say it now?
Yeah. I'm going to play some David Bowie shortly. And the other day, I was in a hardware store, and they had at the counter, sometimes hardware stores, for some reason, I don't know what it is about hardware stores, but they have selections of cheap, very, very cheap DVDs over there by the checkout. And sometimes they're quite good.
In hardware stores?
Yeah. I've noticed it. Maybe they have them in lots of places, but something about hardware stores, they just sort of think, "Oh yeah, by the way, how about a DVD?" And so they've got a really
weird... What sort of films?
Mostly 10th-rate sort of
really
stuff. But in amongst the 10th-rate stuff was Labyrinth.
Well, that's because they stop films about tools.
Nice. They had an anniversary edition of Labyrinth, 2-disc set.
I only say that because of the codpiece.
Sure. And there was a documentary on this Labyrinth disc.
Oh, that's a great documentary. It's long.
Yeah.
It's sort of feature length and it's got amazing interviews with David.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
It's called Inside the Labyrinth or Behind the Labyrinth, maybe?
It's called Up the Labyrinth.
Up the Labyrinth. Right, Up the Labyrinth it's called. And I was reminded how much I love that film. I mean, we went to see it when it came out, didn't we, in the Odeon Leicester Square. And it was 1986, and we were very excited as Bowie fans.
It was 86.
And Jim Henson fans. And excited about the fact that Terry Jones had written the screenplay for Monty Python, of course. Now I'm trying to get my boys to watch the thing. It's too frightening for them.
It is a little bit scary.
Because it's too real and wonkaloid. It's all pre-CG.
Well, the sort of Wizard of Ozzy stuff, but at the beginning and end, the bookend stuff is quite peculiar.
Yeah.
The character, her home life is quite weird. And then when it all kicks off, when the lightning storm starts in her bedroom, it is pretty scary.
Yes. And let's remind people who haven't seen the film that this is basically about a young girl. What's the name of the actress? Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah, she's very beautiful. She was in... Once Upon a Time in America, just before that.
That's right. So this is more or less her second role, having been plucked from a life as a model, I think, to play this part of a young girl who's complaining about the fact that her baby brother is making so much noise. And she says, "I wish the pixies would come and take you away."
Oh, shouldn't wish that.
And suddenly, just after she's wished that, there's a clap of thunder, and an owl flies into the room and transforms into Jareth, the Goblin King, played by one David Bowie. And so David is standing there, resplendent in his skin-tight jodhpurs, displaying for all the world his magnificent goblin pocket, and he is wearing a timelessly ludicrous hairpiece. I mean, it's got to be the worst kind of hairstyle ever created that will never, ever be fashionable, ever.
It's good. I mean, you're about to enter a world of crazy-haired Muppet puppets.
Yeah, that's true.
That haircut is your intro into that world.
And it looks, well, how would you describe it? It's kind of a Lamal fountain of
It's a
hair.
Sort of Strul, Peter, isn't it?
Yeah, it's poking at it, but it's not, because that's more, I think, of Edward Scissorhands when you say Strul, Peter. Mm. That's more a Russell Brand type bird's nest. But this is just ridiculous fright wig pointing up. Anyway, Bowie makes it look good, I think, as Jareth the Goblin King. But this behind-the-scenes thing is a treat. And Bowie is there being interviewed and taking it all very seriously. Here's a little clip of Bowie talking about how he became involved with the project.
He first brought me the concept on the 1983 tour that I did in America and asked me if I'd consider doing the part. And he showed me a copy of The Dark Crystal, which I found a fascinating piece of work. And I could see the potentiality of making that kind of movie with humans, with songs, with a more of a lighter comedy script.
Hello, David, excuse me.
Whoa, what is it? I've just come off stage. Why are you interrupting me?
I got an idea for a movie where I had puppets and a codpiece.
That sounds very it sounds very interesting.
Are
yes.
you Frank Oz?
Yeah, these are very broad impressions of everybody.
It's like puppets and a codpiece.
I'm interested. Come into my dressing room. Have you done anything before?
I was kind of involved in The Dark Crystal.
That's a fascinating piece of work.
I can absolutely see the potentiality in what you're talking
about. It's very provocative.
It's superlatively provocative, and I'd be very interested in becoming involvicised. But it's a joyful documentary because you forget that it was such a hotbed of talent, that film. Apart from Bowie and Frank Oz himself, he's such a legendary figure. You've got the artist Ron Mueck. Do you know that guy? He makes these giant lifelike sculptures. Well, he plays around with scale. He had a very famous piece called Dead Dad, which was a sculpture that he made.
And he was involved in Labyrinth?
He was. He was one of the puppeteers.
I didn't think he'd be old enough to do that. I thought he was a young chap.
He was very young when he was in Labyrinth. At that stage, he was a model maker, an Australian model maker who'd been involved.
An Australian model maker?
Right. And then he moved to the UK, and now he's, you know, known as a fine artist. He was in there. You've got George Lucas hanging around the set, of course, because he was exec producing that. You got Terry Jones in there. And there's, for Star Trek fans, Beverly Crusher's sister does the choreography.
But anyway, you're going to play a good record. Yeah. I had this on 12-inch before the film came out. I used to play this over and over again.
I mean, musically, it wasn't... I'm going to stick my neck out here. Hey, musically, the period wasn't Bowie's strongest. Maybe,
what?
I'm saying. Here, for example, is a clip of Magic Dance that he created
dance,
for the film.
Dance, baby, dance.
Let's
this
check
is great.
It out. You know, that's not Eno producing there. That's all I'm saying.
It was just, those are all the hip sounds of the time.
Do you miss it when people scratch things up and say, power of voodoos?
Yes, I do miss it. I think it should come back.
Yeah. So anyway, the song that came out of the thing that was kind of a hit for Bowie, of course, was Underground, which is what I'm going to play now.
Fantastic.
And I do like it. I love the sort of gospel feeling of it, and it reminds me of happy times. This is David Bowie with Underground.
Loving
David Bowie, Goblin King there.
What a great record. An all-time classic, as far as I'm concerned.
You can see me doing a little audition for Jareth the Goblin King on YouTube, I think, somewhere, if you search for that.
I did a scratch mix of that, you know, when I was about 15.
Of Underground.
Yeah, maybe I'll bring it in one day. I'll still get it on cassette.
Come on, that would be awful. Great. Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. It's gone 12:30. It's time for the news. I've never heard that. Stone Roses. That's unbelievable that I've never heard that, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
What they were wasting their time if Buckley's hasn't heard
exactly
it.
Exactly. What the world is waiting for, released 1989 double A-side with Fool's Gold. Yeah, because they had the same drum pattern, didn't they, on there? Good times. Drum pattern, drum beat, whatever you want to call it. Oh, for goodness sake, let's just play the jingle, James.
I like to change the lyrics of songs from time to time.
Lock the taskbar.
Make them refer to things I do.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh
I call yeah. It appropriation, and as far as I'm aware, it isn't a crime. I wonder if it's something you do too.
Yes it is, yes it is, yes it is.
I'd say that was my favourite Buckley's jingle.
You know, I was trying very hard to do something a little less aggressive and
you did very well. It's beautiful, very lovely singing.
Here's a message from Julia. She's aged 30 from Liverpool. She says, "Dear Count Buckula and Corn Dog, at work, when I am feeling particularly pressured to balance the many conflicting demands which are expected from a personal assistant, I like to sing, 'Stressed! Ah! I've got an ulcer the size of the universe!'"
What?
In the style
I've got a what of the size of the universe?
An ulcer. Ah. In the style of Flash Gordon by the Mighty Queen. I find that vocalising this doesn't help at all, but I still find myself singing it every single time.
I've got a bit of scorn to pour on that.
Go on then.
I mean, I think it's very easy. I mean, Flash, you could put any single syllable word into Flash.
Stress! Yeah, but the word stress is in, you know, it fits. It has the right kind of...
It's good, it's good, it's good. I mean, people were saying the same thing about one we had the other week. The guy that sang his name to the shaving advert, Gillette. The best a man can get. Yeah. So maybe I'm, you know, maybe I it's the pot calling the kettle black.
That calling the kettle back, don't you mean?
Yeah.
That was my wife's favourite. Mike Shinks, the best that Fran could
that's
get.
That's right, that's right. here's one, what we got from Sinead and Hugh Kelly in London. Have you noticed how the tube announcements have started pointing out which side of the train the door will open? Which side of the train the door will open? That makes sense, yes.
Yeah.
This makes me and my husband start singing, "The doors will open on the left-hand side." The other passengers do tend to look at us a bit strangely, but this always amuses us no end.
What was that noise you made?
It was just like a sort of six-year-old
to help
laughing.
People.
Yeah, it's just a hint what you're supposed to do in response to that. Cornballs. Thanks, Sinead and Hugh Kelly.
Can Cornball's laughter.
I mean, that's public appropriation.
Yeah.
Is that sensible to do these things loudly in public, to sing these things?
Yes, joyful.
Joyful?
Yeah.
People might think you're a moron.
No. Everyone does pop-propriation. Everybody.
Everybody. Yeah.
Everybody. True. Dear Jojo and Buxtable, says Richard and Sarah, a male man and a female woman from Brighton, our daughter has just turned two and is still susceptible to the sorts of snots and sniffles that often loiter in toddler noses. Whenever my wife or I attempt to gently decongest said nose with a tissue, we literally cannot help but sing to the tune of Heatwave's Boogie Nights, "Bogey Nose. Ain't no doubt you are really snotty. Bogey Nose, come on now, got to get it cleaned up. Dance with the boogies, get down, dance with, because your bogey nose is always the best in town. You've got bogies in your bogey nose."
Bogey nights there. Bogey nights.
That's a good one, though.
It's good one.
I made up a song for my for Frank when he was very snotty. Mm. I had it like a original thing, which was...
You going to sing it to us?
Well, bogey nose, bogey nose, bogey nose. But it was a bit... Yeah, I don't really want to...
Backpedaling.
He's got a great
it's
big
too
bogey
personal.
Up his
it's
nose.
Too personal. It's just a... It's just
no one wants to hear that.
No, it's personal.
Oh, dear. Sorry, Frank.
finally, here's one from Dermot. Which, now, this person was trying to trick me out with their name because it's spelt D-I-A-R-M-A-I-D. Diarmaid.
Diarmaid.
But I looked it up on the internet.
Nice.
And I know it's pronounced Dermot.
Good job, man.
I'm a man. I'm a male man in Galway, Ireland, in the 17 to 25 demographic, and I have a appropriation for you. When I walk into a room and the room is a bit chilly, I like to sing, cold, cold in here, wah, wah, wah.
Oh, like golden year.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Cold, cold in here, wah, wah, wah.
That's quite a good one.
Very good.
Yeah.
And finally, from me, we had quite a few of these. This is one that's very popular for pop-propriation. I'm talking about the track Physical by Olivia Newton-John.
I like that track. I've got it on 7.
Does that bear up well?
I haven't listened to it for a while.
It's got one of the
20 years, perhaps.
It's got a sort of sick sexist video, I seem to recall.
Sick and sexist.
Sick and sexist.
It's just ladies working out. There's nothing sexist about just, being a lady.
I think it was Olivia working out amongst a group of
very fat men.
Very overweight men,
that's,
yeah.
That's weightist and sexist. Yes, yeah, you're right.
Exactly. It's disgraceful. Louise, a London girl, says, I'm listening to the podcast and the item on pop-appropriation reminded me that the other day when getting ready to cycle on a gloomy day, I'd put on lots of high-vis clothes and lights. I started singing to the tune of Physical by Olivia Newton-John. Let's get visible, visible. I wanna get visible. Don't want to be invisible. Can you see my yellow coat? My yellow coat. Can you see my yellow coat? That turns into a kind of Heidi High thing at the end there.
It does, doesn't it? It sounds like a sort of public information film.
I want a yellow coat. Can you see my yellow coat?
Who is that?
Peggy.
Is that Sue Pollard?
Yeah.
That's good, man.
That's it for me for pop-appropriation. Have you got any more in your locker there?
No.
Okay. Let's play some Metronomy now. We're going to be hanging out with Metronomy, I hope. I mean, they're big. They're one of these bands that, you know, they were sort of grooving around in the shadows earlier this year. And now they're on the pyramid stage at Glastonbury this year. So I hope we're going to lure them into our stinky den when we're there next weekend. This is The Bay by Metronomy.
Text the Nation. Text, 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 text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Text the Nation this week is all about nature war. Times when you think you are going to have a lovely time in God's garden. The benevolent world of green things. You frolic into it and find it biting you on your ass in a nasty manner. Here is one from Nick in Cumbria. I took my family for a nice Boxing Day walk to see some icicles that had been pictured in the local paper.
Good effort, mate.
The path to them turned out to be a treacherous sheet of ice. My three daughters were weeping in fear. Our pensioner friend Maggie slipped off the path onto a frozen river. She couldn't get back up until passing walkers equipped with boot spikes lashed together dog leads and hauled her out. They didn't look impressed by our sloppy shoes. I got it in the neck big style, but I told my wife, we've gained an anecdote. Love you guys, Nick in Cumbria. I like stuff that turns horrific. I mean, that's good because no one was actually hurt, yeah, but it started out as a lovely little frolic and turned into a Kevin MacDonald style nightmare.
I'm impressed that he got the family out to see the icicles there. That would not have gone down well.
Well, they were probably amazing.
Yeah.
Imagine the picture in the local paper.
I guess they would have made them look nice.
Yeah, they're all icicles. Nice and icy. Here's one from Rob in Croston in Lancashire. Sometimes when I'm walking or running along, I see an overhanging tree branch. I like to give it a high five. I'm high-fiving nature. Is it a bit OCD, perhaps? But I love to do it. I also used to do this when riding my bike until one horrible day. On my route home from work, there was always a tempting branch, which punctuated my journey home. Nowhere near the road. That would be dangerous. This was on the university campus. It was quite high, so I always had to stand up on my pedals to reach to connect with it. High five! On this occasion, all went textbook, but in the time it took me to put my hand back on the handlebars, my trouser cuff got caught on my chain and I lost my balance. I ended up with the bike on top of me, my foot through the spokes in the of the front wheel.
Yarg!
Luckily, I only grazed my arms and no one was around to laugh at me. But I don't tend to high-five trees on my bike anymore.
Oh, it's a shame no one saw that. He would have looked like a Wally.
It's tempting to grab a leaf, isn't it, when you pass an overhanging branch?
Oh, yeah, tear a bit of foliage off.
Yeah, or if you're passing a bush, to pluck a leaf off.
You don't
roll it between your fingers.
You don't go up to a person and pull out their hair.
Yes, I do.
Why would you do it to a tree?
Here's another one.
Children love to do that. They love to damage foliage. You really have to explain.
Well, it grows back.
I know. It's very hard to explain to a child why it's a bad thing just to yank some foliage.
I think it depends on the number of leaves on the tree. I mean, if there's lots, then the leaf can spare it.
I'm going to make a film all about trees coming to pull your hair out.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think trees should be allowed to give joy to a child?
Not that. They can do other things. They can hug them.
Hug the tree. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Here's one for Joggle and Buxy.
Oh, yeah.
Who are they?
I don't know. They sound cool.
Whenever I was very young, sort of a way to start a message.
Every time.
I remember going for a walk with my parents and their friends, who included a minister. I saw what I thought was a very nice stick, which I wanted for my stick collection.
I've got one.
I picked it up excitedly and was confused when it squished.
Oh,
nature and I have never seen eye to eye since. Fight one last one.
That's like the joke, though, isn't it? What's brown and sticky?
Yeah. Well, not really. Because it's not a stick. Stephen, a boy man from Dublin. I came home from work on Monday to notice the front door of my house was covered in caterpillars. My girlfriend would not let me get rid of them because she said they would turn into butterflies and it would be, open quotes, lovely, close quotes. Her teacher friend said it would be highly educational to bring them into class to show them turning into butterflies. The next day we got an email from her teacher friend to say that one had exploded into maggots and the others were dying.
Exploded into maggots?
Not the lesson she planned for her seven-year-olds. Yes. Maggots. What are these maggots? In that some of the children got maggots in their eyes and faces, and the others were dying. They're probably being sick while they were dying. Awful. Expected something lovely and got a hideous explosion of maggots and caterpillar vomit. The end. Keep those coming in. Text the nation is Nature Wars. AdamandJoe.6music@bbc.co.uk is the email address.
It's Johnny Chingas.
Oh yeah, this is. Oh, I've got a story about this as well. This link's going on forever.
Yeah, sorry.
This is a record called Phone Home by Johnny Chingas, yeah. And I've been trying to figure out what it was called and how to get hold of it for months. And then completely out of the blue,
where'd you hear it first?
A listener called Stephen Haywood said, "You've been playing early hip hop and electro. Would you consider playing these obscure tracks?" I've been trying to search for it. I've been searching Phone Home. I've been searching ET. And this record hit me hard when I was a kid because it appears to have the noise of the monster from An American Werewolf in London in it. And it also mentions ET. It's by Johnny Chingas. It's from 1983. It's called Phone Home. Here it is. That's Mr. Johnny Chingas with Phone Home from 1983. Thank you again to Stephen Haywood, who helped me track that down. I've been looking for that for years, mate. I didn't know who it was by, and Stephen told me.
Good stuff. Next weekend, folks, we are going to be finishing off our little run here at Six Music for the time being at the mighty Glastonbury. We're doing three shows from the festival. We'll be there starting Six Music's coverage at 10 a.m. on Friday morning. So if you're heading to the festival, come and hook up, yeah?
But here's an exciting thing. If you are at the festival, we want to come and see you, or want you to come and see us, more likely. When is this going to be?
On the Saturday morning.
For
the first half hour of our show, we're going to be out and about. So
from 10 a.m. to 10:30.
Exactly. Black Squadron time, basically.
If you're at the festival, if you come to the pyramid stage,
we'll be on the left-hand side.
If you're facing the stage to the left,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
a little gate.
And if you go onto the blog, which is bbc.co.uk/blogs/AdamandJoe, you can find out all those details. Plus, I think we're going to put maybe a little bit of a cheeky Bronholm mask there for you to print out and wear. That might help identify you as a Black Squadron member. We might have a little communal taffin shoutage. What about that? That'll
That's
be
a good
fun.
Idea.
Yeah, so to perk you up on that Saturday morning, we hope it'll be a beautiful day. Come and join us.
We'll leave you details of that liaison on the blog as well.
Coming up is Liz Kershaw, so stay tuned for her. She's got Emmy the Great on the show. Didn't realise that. She's going to be live on Liz Kershaw's programme. Thank you so much for listening today. Have a great week, and we'll see you in Glastonbury. We love you. Bye!